Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, 30 for 30 podcast. 30 for 30 is back with season 8. Heavy Metals, Inside the Karoly Gymnastics Empire, is a groundbreaking 7-part podcast series that takes listeners on a deep dive into the lives and influence of Bella and Marta Karoly, the most successful and controversial coaches in USA Gymnastics history. The whole season is available now. Be sure to check it out. You can download 30 for 30 podcast as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we got life in the NBA bubble. What the NFL really needs to be paying attention to right now with COVID-19 and entanglements. But first, the football team in Washington is going to change its name. They put out a statement on Monday to say that they were going to change the name of the football team. But did you notice the news that started coming out on Sunday surrounding that team? Two of their executives are getting forced out. Think about this for a second. How in the world is it that they would be at this point of saying they're going to change the name and putting out a statement just to say the name was going to change with no information subsequent, right? All they're saying is, we're going to change the name. Well, we knew you were going to do that based on everything that had been coming around. There was no reason for them to slow play this. They could have just come out here when they had figured out what the name was going to be. And that is not what they did. And I'm sorry, I have no problem saying that I am cynical enough to look up and not just believe, but also think it's kind of pretty obvious. They wanted to bury this other thing. You ever heard of a situation where a team fires the director of player personnel and the assistant director of player personnel on a Sunday afternoon?
In the fine print, nonetheless?
Yeah, on a Sunday afternoon. But here it is, Alex Santos and Richard Mann II. And I feel like Richard Mann I wishes you wouldn't have put that second on there right now. He ain't feeling so proud. Details are sparse. They've cleaned out the whole front office, to be clear. Like, they've moved a whole lot of people in a whole lot of directions to give Ron Rivera this power. But it still comes off as being a little bit weird that they did this right now. And, hey, why talk about that when you could talk about the fact that now they say they are, in fact, going to change the name of the football team? I made a few people upset because we sent a clip out yesterday for when I was on Highly Questionable. And the question for the topic, you know how this goes, man. You do a television show, it all starts around a question. So the question was, should Daniel Snyder get a pat on the back for changing the name? And when we put it online, you don't hear the producer asking the question. All you hear is me jumping up and saying he doesn't deserve any credit. And they're like, well, they're not looking for any credit. Okay, guys, I feel like you're kind of missing the point here. My point, and I think it is a very important point as it relates to Snyder and this team and everything else, is you got to explain why it is that this name had to change, right? There needs to be some measure of acknowledgement and culpability, not just from Snyder, but also from the NFL for why it is that you allowed this to go on for as long as it did. Larry Hogan is the governor of Maryland, but he said last week, now is the time to change the name. It's always been the time to change the name. As we have discussed previously, people have been changing the names of these teams that had Native American mascots and imagery for decades and decades and decades. Gabe, this is what I honestly didn't realize until now. The Golden State Warriors, did you know that Warriors was a playoff of a Native American name? And apparently, I didn't know this, apparently they had the Native American imagery up until 1974.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And the thing is you can still buy retro gear that has an image of a Native American man on it. Have you seen the logo itself?
I have not.
It's like a basketball with like a little like Native man dancing over it, basically.
Oh, no.
It's incredibly problematic.
By the way, interesting. You know, if you were the type to believe in like karma and the likes, they got rid of the imagery in 1974. You know what happened in 1975? Championship.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they won the championship right after that went down. But my point being, I didn't know that. All kinds of people did not know that. Like, I remember when Marquette University, they used to be the Warriors. And then they changed their name to the Golden Eagles. And I was like, I don't really understand why it is that you need to change the name from Warriors. That's how deep all of this is, that I did not realize that Warriors was a euphemistic attempt to try to refer to Native Americans, right? But people have been changing these names for so long, not even a big deal when it's happened, right? Like, it's been done. These teams that still have the Native American names, they're the ones who are late, right? You know, people hit, I've seen people, well, when did you start caring about this? People have been caring about these things for 50 and 60 years to try to get this done. And please understand the depths of this. Like, Dennis Rodman went to Southeastern Oklahoma State University. And in case if you were wondering if there was a name worse than Redskins that somebody could use, their mascot was the Savages. And this is in the state that has all the pride in their Native Americanness. It doesn't have to be like this. Everybody's been in a position to change these names. And now you need to own why it is that you did not change it before. You need to own why it is that you're changing right now. Now, to be fair to Snyder, I could make the argument that he's owning it, because if you look at the statement that they put out on Monday about changing the name, they put sponsors in front of fans and in front of Native Americans every single time, right? The sponsors said that they were going to do this. But let me tell you what I don't see in the statement that the football team in Washington put out. I'm going to read this whole statement. I'm going to see if you notice what's not involved here. Says, on July 3rd, we announced the commencement of a thorough review process of the team's name. That review has begun in earnest. As part of this process, we want to keep our sponsors, fans, and community apprised of our thinking as we go forward. Today, we are announcing we will be retiring the blank name and logo upon completion of this review. I guess I already said Redskins before, so forgive me. It's a little tricky. Dan Snyder, Coach Rivera are working closely to develop a new name and design approach that will enhance the standing of our proud, tradition-rich franchise and inspire our sponsors, fans, and community for the next 100 years. They didn't say a goddamn thing about Native people.
And look at the top of the letterhead, right?
Yes. Well, I'm okay with them on the letterhead, right? And the reason I'm okay with the letterhead is they don't have any other letterhead, right? Like, what else are they supposed to do right now? Do you realize? And this is where this is crazy to me. They're going to try to do a rebrand of a billion-dollar company in 2 months.
Well, and here's the thing, too, that I didn't think about until this past weekend. Have they said anything about changing the colors? They're keeping the colors, right?
I don't know. I don't think any of us have any idea.
Are they going to enforce people showing up, not this year, obviously, but next year, showing up to FedEx Field with what would constitute retro gear with imagery of Native American peoples on the shirts and stuff?
Throw every single one of them out. Now, the question is going to be, because Snyder's not going to want to do that, but I bet you Fred Smith and all these other cats, they'll be down for it. The solution to this is, if the same way you do it with anybody else, if people show up in anything else that is obviously hateful, right? You're going to toss them out. Simple as that. And if these people decide they want to show out by showing up to the state, I mean, assuming, you know, whenever we get to show up to stadiums, right? But if they decide they want to show out, we're going to show them all the door. Don't let them in, whatever it takes. This is what it's going to be. If they keep the colors and they change the name, like, I wouldn't blame them if they decided to try to find a way to do this that allowed them to incorporate their previous colors, because there's nothing wrong with the colors. I wouldn't have a problem with them if they decided to do it in a way that still allowed them to use R, so that all that gear they have that is burgundy and gold and then has the R on it. Go ahead and do that. The problem is not the use of R. The problem is not the use of the colors. The problem is the use of the racial slur. And so you just got to stop using this racial slur. But again, have you ever heard of a rebrand taking place in 2 months? If the team would have come up and said, hey, we're going to get on this for the 2021 season, I would not have had a problem with it. I would have understood it. And I think, honestly, if I would have been a person to understand it, then a significant number of people also would have understood it, because you can't rebrand a whole team in 2 months. And now Snyder says that he and Rivera are going to work together on the team name. And I hope Ron Rivera, I hope they put a little something extra in his pocket for all of this, because he came to coach a football team. What has happened since he got there is they've made him the front and the face of everything, because nobody has any respect for the rest of the organization, right? They basically made him their Bill Belichick, because they have to. That dude doesn't feel like sitting around and coming up with a new mascot. He's a football coach. He's not interested in trying to come up with all of these. You imagine what it's like for Ron Rivera when he's in there trying to figure out the team and somebody comes up to him with like a storyboard or something like that to try to explain what they're going to do to rebrand and remarket this team. He has no interest in participating in that sort of thing. None whatsoever. I mean, you're not going to convince me at least that he does. But how are they not going to mention Native people in that statement at all? Because that's the whole reason why we're here. That's the whole reason why FedEx and those people are here, right? We are here because of the disrespect that has been perpetrated upon Native people by this franchise for 87 years, right? That's why we're here. And Snyder and that team have not acknowledged their part. So there is a value in them taking the name down because it stops amplifying this idea that it's okay to treat people in this way. And it's doubly important, I think, because of Washington. Maybe not as important as it would have been 30 years ago, but I don't know. Like, I feel like if you're a certain age, the thing that you can't really grasp is the role that that football team plays with the federal government, right? Like, this is the football team in Washington. This is a place where congressmen and the likes want to be seen, want to go when they're good, want to go hang out, regardless of what state they're from, right? Like, that, you know, going to watch that team was a thing. A story is about Richard Nixon in the box sending down a plate, you know, like this wasn't just the team of Washington for a while. You could make an argument that it was like the team of the president of the United States, and they were going about business in the ways that they were. Like, no, I think changing the name matters. But I think in terms of moving forward, the part that matters more than anything is an acknowledgement of the truth. What matters more than anything is an acknowledgement of the wrong that has been committed. And that team name is a wrong. And there needs to be an acknowledgement. This name was disrespectful. We chose to keep this disrespectful name because what we wanted mattered more than human decency. That is a necessary and important step in this process. Because otherwise, all you wind up with is that team got to profit off of this imagery. They got to build everything off of it. And then all of a sudden, when it wasn't worth it to them, they got to bail. And there's no accountability whatsoever for this. Like, what would happen if somebody asked Dan Snyder? Because keep in mind, as of now, he hasn't had to answer a question. What would happen if somebody asked Dan Snyder, so why are you changing the name? And let's say that he was transparent and he said, because the sponsors want us to change it. Why do the sponsors want us to change it? Well, you'll have to ask them. Well, Mr. Snyder, I'm sure that you asked them why they wanted to change. What did they tell you? Well, I don't know. You'll have to talk to them. Well, Fred Smith is a minority owner of this team, so I feel like you can speak for him in this context, since this is something that matters to your team. Who's going to be the one to make him do it? Who's going to be the one to make him acknowledge and explain why it is that they decided to do this? They didn't just wake up one day and decide, we want to have a new name. The man who said in all caps, we are never going to change the name. Why did you change your mind? What is this? Because this is not, this time cannot simply be about my bad, act like it didn't happen before. In order for this to be long run productive for anybody, to make it worth it for anybody, is going to require some truth. Was the truth of reconciliation? That's what people talk about here. That's what this team has got to do. And I really hope that they do it. I don't feel confident that they're going to do it. But more importantly, and the part that disturbs me is, I am not confident that the people in my line of work are going to demand them of this. And the reason is very simple. Even in the case of Dan Snyder, y'all still want to give these white folks the benefit of the doubt. I don't give a damn if there ain't no precedent. You got to do it. Like, time is new, man. You got to be the one to step up here and acknowledge. So many Native people, I don't care what poll you got, right? It ain't hard to find a Native person that finds his name offensive. Get out of my face with this. Well, you know, my Native American friend says that he thinks that this is okay. I don't give a damn about your Native American friend right now, to be honest, right? You know this ain't right. You know that this is not decent. You know that this is actually a violation of what we find to be socially acceptable, and it was only deemed to be socially acceptable because it was about this particular group of people, the people that we have tried to erase, that we have tried to ignore for centuries. That's who we are, and it needs to change.
How much of people not being willing to force the question and ask them to, you know, kind of atone for their actions, how much of that is related to how we treat Native American peoples in this country and whether or not there's an actual acknowledgement of that history?
I don't think that the refusal to acknowledge has nearly as much to do with Native people as it has to do with white people. We're not going to get this done by working so hard to not make white people feel bad about it. Like, I kept having people hit me again. They were like, well, you know, they changed the name. What more do you want? Like, when it first came out, I said the only thing left out of that statement at the end was, you happy now? Right? Like, that was the only thing that wasn't in there is, you happy now? So, no, like, I understand for Native people celebrating the fact that they are no longer going to be debased in this way nationally. I get where they are coming from and say it's a cause for celebration. It ain't no cause for celebration for the rest of us unless somebody's going to own this. Someone is responsible. And look, even if Snyder ain't the one to own it, fine. He don't have to own it. Roger Goodell, you got to own it because you defended his ability to do this for the longest. You stood up there and you talked about how, well, this is his own team and he gets to do whatever he wants. Okay, cool. He gets to do whatever he wants. You get to say whatever you want. And you got money behind you clearly that'll be on your side to give what is the necessary public acknowledgement. We were wrong for nearly 100 years to allow this to happen, right? My thing and why I keep putting this back to our white people and why it's important, and it's something for you to check historically. White folks are really good at chastising racists after they die or after the people who supported them die. There's a struggle to do it when those people are still alive. Case in point, you saw what happened at Clemson where they took John Calhoun's name off the Honor College and all that stuff, right? They got all that done. Strom Thurmond, they ain't doing that because the people that voted for Strom Thurmond are still alive. The people that were riding for Strom Thurmond were still alive. And if you come out and acknowledge Strom Thurmond's history of racism, then those people got a cop to the fact like, yo, I voted for Strom Thurmond. And the question I've asked South Carolinians for a while is, all I know about Strom Thurmond is racism. Is there something that I'm missing here? Right? Is there something that you love about him other than the racism? The dude who did a 24-hour filibuster to stop the 1957 Civil Rights Act from being passed, didn't work, obviously. But like, what were y'all riding for? And that's the question that those people don't want to answer because they don't want to have to bring it back to themselves. And I think a lot of people, for the grace of God, there go I, right? Like for a lot of those people, they look at those folks got to own what they've done, then maybe they themselves have to own what they do. That's how it is when Mike Gundy comes up with that apology that he gave in that hostage video. People are like, oh, wow, that's such a great apology because you just want to make it so easy. Right? You just want to be like, oh, damn, my bad. And then just move on like nothing ever happened. Like, have you ever had anybody in your life who tries to kick it with you like that? Like a lot of us with different family situations, we've been there where somebody do you wrong for a long time and then just want to be like, all right, maybe we can just start over. That doesn't work. That's not fair. That's cruel, in fact. And so just changing the name and walking on from Snyder is as arrogant and cruel as anything that he has done otherwise. And people not demanding more. This is our chance. Because at some point, either he going to have to stand in front of us or Ron Rivera going to have to stand in front of us and they going to have to answer this. And by the way, if Ron Rivera has to be the guy to come up in front of us to answer for it, don't let him slide just because he ain't Dan Snyder. Hold his ass to the wall. And the reason I'm going to say that is what I will never forget about Ron Rivera. Ever, 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 ever. It will color the way I look at him until the end of time. After they got Jerry Richardson out of there, Mr. Remember that? We got this report about people calling him Mr. when he was walking around there. I've been told that during the negotiations for the 2011 lockout, the players were calling him Pappy because that was his get down. Ron Rivera stood up in the locker room after the game, which the Panthers won, and dedicated the game ball to Mr. Richardson. That's right. So if you decide that you're going to be the man that carries the water for the owner, like if that's your get down, carry all of it. Get up there and explain that name. Get up there and say the whole thing. If you're going to let Dan Snyder hide behind you, then the way we're going to get him to stop, bombard him with hard questions and don't let him get away with, hey, man, I'm new here. No, dog, you're the face of the franchise right now. And you knew what this franchise was when you decided to sign up for it. And you didn't have to take that job. You decided to take the job of the team that had this imagery. You got to ride for this. You got to answer for this. You do. And if that man's going to hide behind you, then we need to make it so hot that that man is like, nah, y'all need to go talk to Dan Snyder about this. Because the truth is, it is more for Dan Snyder to answer for. It is where he has to come for this. It is where Roger Goodell has to answer for this. Somebody has to explain why the name is changing. And that is the part that is missing as of right now. And that's the part that's missing from this whole dialogue. And once you do that, right, once you do that, now we can get to the next step of this. Chicago Blackhawks, Kansas City Chiefs, Atlanta Braves, all y'all are next. Like, whether you realize it or not, all y'all are next. The thing with Washington was different than the rest of them because Washington is the only one that explicitly used a slur. When Washington fans are like, why y'all always picking on us? Because y'all's is the worst. That's why the Cleveland, I forgot about the Cleveland Indians, right? And they've already said, hey, we need to look into this, right? But the reason they were the next one on it was because of Wahoo. And by the way, the current Wahoo might actually be better than the previous Wahoos. Like, let me tell you something that really, 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 really bothered me. I'll never forget this. You remember when Cleveland went to the World Series and they had one dude who was left from the 48 team that won the World Series. And the dude's name was Eddie Robinson, not to be confused with the football coach, Eddie Robinson. Okay. And so they had Eddie Robinson out there. And I'm looking at a web post from 2016 when that happened, when they invited him. And the headline is Indians invite controversial member of 1948 championship team, right? And what was controversial about, first of all, the fact that they called him controversial. No, man, the problem was the man was racist, right? It wasn't controversial. The man was racist. So it says here, he was also an anti-integrationist who refused to shake hands with Larry Doby when Doby joined the Indians and became the first black player in the American League. And then they put this dude, they show him in the box. He's wearing the old Cleveland logo with a crazy racist insignia on it. And everybody's clapping for him because that man was not put in a position where he had to own any of this stuff that we are talking about, right? You know, and that's the thing, they keep doing this kind of stuff. So they're next, and I think they know that they're next. All of them have to go. And I want to say something particular to fans of the Atlanta Braves. Now, for those of you who do not know, first thing outside of my parents and my brother that I ever loved in this world was the Atlanta Braves. They were the center of my life for the entirety of my childhood. Like, there's no way around this. Like, the role that they play for me, and the way I always have to explain to people is, we moved from Atlanta to Houston right before I turned 7. And the one thing from home that came with me were the Braves because of the Superstation. You know? So I was watching every Braves game. I'm asking my parents, like, the coolest thing about moving to Houston was we moved to the Central Time Zone. So that meant at least I got to watch a couple of innings of the games that were on the West Coast because the Braves were in the West at the time. They were the Atlanta Braves, but they were in the Western Division at the time. So they're playing the Giants, they're playing the Padres, they're playing the Dodgers, you know, and you just ask. It's like, oh man, I can get to see Tony Gwynn, like all this stuff. Like, that was where I was. That was my team. And I understand what the tomahawk chop is to Braves fans that is a little different than what you're going to have with a lot of these other teams. And here's what the difference is. The tomahawk chop is not part of Braves tradition, right? And if you're an Atlanta Braves fan, the only real tradition that you have is Hank Aaron and losing. That's it. They won the Western Division in 1969, and they won it in 1982. Aaron broke the home run record in 1974. There's not really much to talk about outside of that. And then leading up to 91, they finished last in the West in 86, second to last in 87, and then last, I want to say, in 88, 89, and 90. And then they won the division in 91, and that set off a run of, 15 straight years of making the postseason. But 91 is when the tomahawk chop showed up. It showed up with Deion Sanders. It was part of this larger building thing around that team that really built up during the second half of that season because they were down either 8.5 or 9.5 games at the All-Star break that year. And then the Dodgers started getting shaky, and then it built, and then it built, and then it built. And while this is happening, the tomahawk chop is becoming a thing in that stadium. That stadium had never been full before. You know what I'm saying? Like, all those things started coming. So for Braves fans, you're not even necessarily tying that to, like, childhood as much as you are tying this to winning. You are tying this to literally the best time that you've ever had as a fan. I understand where it is that you are coming from. And I don't give a f-. It's got to go. You can let this go. It's not that hard. You can let this go. You didn't have this forever. you can let this go. It won't change anything. You could come up with something else to get people rowdy, right? You could come up with something else to get people into it. It doesn't have to be this. And even if you can't, right? Like, so there's a concept in economics called Pareto optimality. The idea behind Pareto optimality is that a Pareto optimal solution is one where both sides agree on it, because if one side unilaterally changes either their utility or the other side's utility will fall, right? This is basically at a place where there's no way to leave this spot without somebody losing. And so what winds up happening here is, in these situations, we keep trying to come up with ways to do this where basically where white folks won't lose something. And that doesn't matter. Sometimes you have to lose. These people that we're talking about have been losing for so long. Sometimes it's time for you to lose. And if you got to lose the tomahawk chop, it's no big deal. Now, the Braves have said that they're not going to change the name, but they will look into the tomahawk chop. How about this? Why don't you look into the tomahawk on the jersey? That's the first change you can make. And this is important also. They had the tomahawks on the jerseys when they were in Milwaukee. The majority of the time in Atlanta, they have not had the tomahawk on the jersey, right? They moved to Atlanta in 1966. Most of the time, it hadn't been there. Go look at Hank Aaron in a Braves jersey in Atlanta. You're not going to see a tomahawk. You're going to see that ridiculous feather on the sleeve, which is its own problem. But you're not going to see the tomahawk. This hasn't just been here forever. They brought it back in 1987 to put that on the jersey. You can take that off, right? That's the first step, is to take the tomahawk off the jersey. Because once you take the tomahawk off the jersey, we ain't got to do no chop, really. You really don't, you know? Unless a founding father, Deion Sanders, is so important that you can't besmirch his contribution to the culture. No, you can take that off. Like, if they don't want to change the name, you can rationalize around the name change, maybe. There's no defending the tomahawk chop. And I'm going to take this on another level with the Braves. Again, as a fan of the Atlanta Braves, I have really been bothered and annoyed by that team since they moved to Cobb County. It was a huge thing to me that they moved to Cobb County. And I understood why they moved to Cobb County. There's obviously a lot of levels to it. But they moved to Cobb County and they did the Cobb County thing, or at least Cobb County did its Cobb County thing, where they said, and we're not running MARTA to the stadium. MARTA being public transportation. One of the big complaints about the stadium, Turner Field, when it was in the city, was it was not MARTA accessible. Like, they ran buses and shuttles, but the train couldn't get you right there. And that mattered, because that is not the safest place to be. But that was one of the big things, is it was not accessible to public transportation. And so they move out to Cobb County, right? The destination of white flight for decades in that area. They move out to Cobb County. It's a bit of a traffic boondoggle in the place they were. And Cobb County kept insisting, nope, no MARTA. Nope, no MARTA. Because Cobb County always insists no MARTA. Why? Because they think black people are going to come on the MARTA. I don't know what the hell they doing at Cumberland Mall these days, because it's the only black Apple store I've ever seen. But that is what their concern is we don't want any more black people coming to Cobb County than want to. And I cannot separate the Braves and their move to Cobb County from that. So what they did was they showed a whole lot of maps to indicate that their fan base lived closer to that new stadium. And I'm like, yeah, the fans, maybe the fans in the West Side suburbs did. It's just as far from Alpharetta and everywhere else to get over there as it had been before. I didn't say those people anytime. No, man, you wanted to move out of the city, as, and there's a history of in Atlanta of white people running away from black people at every turn. Right? You can't separate yourself from that. You know anything about this city, that's been the case. And so once they moved to Cobb County, I took it personally. I absolutely admit that I took it personally, because they gave up on the idea of black people patronizing this team. That's how it felt. That's always how it seemed to me, that they just gave up on that. And so this team that continued the long Atlanta tradition of white flight out of the city is also the team that refuses to change the name. Like, not even pretending to look at it, refuses to change the name, but maybe we'll see what we could do about the tomahawk chop. No, man, all of these things are going to have to change. And keep in mind, the Braves are owned corporately. I think it's Liberty Mutual that owns them. Kansas City Chiefs, it's going to have to change. All of these things are going to have to change. The question is the money just saying racial slurs? That's the problem. Is it that superficial? that it's simply because Washington was named after a racial slur that you're going to do this? Is it that superficial? Because if it is that superficial, then you are, in fact, wasting your time, right? This is a battle for the mind right now. And your mind knows that these names are indefensible. Stop trying to figure out if white people just like it too much for you to care about being right. Goodyear believes that movement drives us forward, that every mile brings us one step closer to our goals. But Goodyear also believes in the importance of a rest stop and taking a breather to pause and reflect on the road ahead. Sometimes that's all we need to keep going, a moment to compose ourselves before we start moving forward again. So as you get ready to start moving again, Goodyear's here to help. Visit Goodyear.com to learn more. Goodyear, more driven. Here we are. Bubble time has come for the NBA. I think they're going to play. They're going to try to figure it out. What, Russell Westbrook, he tested positive for coronavirus. We're going to have dudes popping in and out of this because of testing positive or some kind of quarantine violation. Now, let me ask you this. Let's say that the season is going on, right? Let's say we're in the playoffs and LeBron accidentally crossed the quarantine line. You think they're going to have him quarantined for 14 days? The answer is no. It's going to be like a concussion test in the Super Bowl. How badly concussed would you have to be for them to fail you on the concussion test in the Super Bowl? Right? Like, let's say Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl has to go over for a concussion test. How many fingers is he going to have to say you holding up before they don't let you in? Right? You would have to hold up your fingers in front of Patrick Mahomes and ask him how many fingers I got up, and he would have to give you the official attendance in the stadium. How many fingers I got up? 75,243. And even then, I mean, he misunderstood the question. Get him back out there. Right? No. That kind of thing ain't going to happen. But when guys test positive, that's going to happen. And they're going to have to sub. Like, dudes are just going to be in and out of this. It's going to be a certain measure of chaos as we try to figure out what the league's got going, what they can make happen. It's going to be weird. I think that's probably the best way that we're going to describe this is it's going to be weird. I want to make a suggestion to the NBA, though, about the way that they handle these games. We haven't had a chance to talk about this on this podcast, and it's something I noticed the other day. So I'm with the league on their push for certain causes right now. I think they're being a little bit clumsy about some of it. I think putting Black Lives Matter on the floor is important. I think that an approved list of names that guys could put on the back of their jerseys for a number of reasons is a bad idea. Part of it is you just can't let these dudes decide themselves. I get that also, right? Like, you can't just be like, whatever you want to have on the back of your jersey, you go ahead and do that, right? I get why you can't. At the same time, it loses something when the league has to approve them. Something's like, I'm going to wear equality on the back of my jersey. That's the best you got is equality. Like, that shouldn't even been on the list. Equality. Oh boy, you're really going out on a limb on that one, buddy. Right? Like, even the racists say they want equality. They just don't understand that that's not really what they be saying. You know, I agree with LeBron when LeBron said that he was like, I'm just going to do my name or whatever. I think that's fine. I don't have any judgment of anybody who doesn't choose to use one of the prescribed statements on the back of the jerseys if they want to do this. But I am telling you right now, and I think this will seem a little ironic to some people hearing me say this, okay? But in the end, what they're producing is a television show. Like, these basketball games are a television show. And you got to figure out, with this emphasis on these matters, how to make a good television show around that. And you cannot be in a situation, if you're the league, where an adherence to amplifying the cause becomes bigger than the television show itself. Like, that's not going to work. That's going to prove to be a problem. And to a degree, it's somewhat exhausting. Now, again, I said I know that people will think that it's ironic to hear me say this, but Gabe, you can vouch for this. I take great care in figuring out the right balance between your vegetables and your dessert in this meal that is the right time. We can't come out here running an NPR program and talking about, we just can't. Like you as a listener, even those of you who agree with me on a lot of these matters or come to me, you know, primarily for that, you're not sticking around for that all the time. That's not what you want, okay? And so what made me think about this with the NBA and the importance of getting it right as a production is I watched the BET Awards this year. I don't know how many of you guys watched the BET Awards this year, but I watched the BET Awards. And, you know, they had to do it virtual, and it's all kinds of performances from all these different places. and it was not an entertaining watch. And it wasn't an entertaining watch because everybody was trying to figure out how to shoehorn Black Lives Matter into their performances or everything, you know, anything else that was going on. Like, and I understand why. Like, I'm not judging anybody for it. I applaud them because they mean well, but I also think that a lot of people got themselves in a position where they were afraid of how it would look if they were the one who did not incorporate Black Lives Matter in their performance. So the Chloe and Halle, the young ladies that work with Beyonce, they did not incorporate into theirs. Smart play. Yo, that's not what they songs are about, right? I would much rather them not do the Black Lives Matter performance than Megan Thee Stallion and also Mad Max, right? Like, her whole situation was Mad Max, and she riding on the Jeep. And then next thing I know, it's a flag with a black fist on it, and they talk about Black Lives Matter. And then she do the Savage song. I'm a savage. What? Like, these things don't have anything to do with one another. No disrespect to Megan Thee Stallion, but she has not sold us social consciousness. I know that she went on to Instagram that one time and said they was going to go clean up the beach. But that's not why we here. That's not why we showed up. You are not dressed like the revolution. And that's okay. It's fine. But you are not the person. No. You could have just done your Savage song and twerked on that Jeep and nobody would have complained. Nobody would have at all. But the theme of the night was forced into all kinds of places that made for a poor television production. That's a legitimate concern, especially if you wish to be effective in amplifying the message, right? It's not simply about doing it just to say that you did it. You have to do this right. And that's why at first I was cool. Like, I thought the names on the back of jerseys or whatever it was a decent idea. But then I was kind of like, I don't know if this is going to go right, you know, in the way that we want to do it. I think the names on the back of the jerseys, what they should have done is they should have said, if you want to put the name of somebody on the jersey, you can. So if you want to put Breonna Taylor's name on your jersey, you can. If you want to put Ahmaud Arbery's name on your jersey, you can. You know, if that's what you wanted to do, you could. But I don't think the slogans are necessarily going to be the best idea because I don't think they're necessarily going to be effective, especially because the slogans are going to be so corny because they have to be something that they can feel confident and comfortable that they can put on television within their corporate climate, like all those things. I just don't think that that's the way to go about it. So I hope the NBA is careful in the way they do it. I don't know the middle ground, right? Where is the space that is effective, but is not like corny overkill? I don't know where exactly that is, but I know they need to be concerned about this if they are really concerned about the larger cause in the way that they say.
Can you imagine someone going up to the free throw line? That's when the opportunity comes to kind of say something about that individual player.
Right.
An announcer's got, you know, their couple notes, their couple details, their hits that they go to whenever it's that player. You know, can you imagine like someone like Marv Albert and Willie Hernan Gomez, you know, goes up to the line and Willie Hernan Gomez has got Si Se Puede on the back of his jersey. And, you know, he decided to do this. Is there going to be a follow up that says why they decided to do that particularly?
That's a good question. Like, I mean, this is ambitious what they're saying they want to do. I will give them grace if they get it wrong. Right. Like, I don't need to slam them for getting it wrong, but I do think it needs to be, you have to get it right. So like for me personally, when we decide that we are going to talk about like these bigger, larger topics, right? And this is the thing that when I worked on High Noon, I was always, you know, I don't know necessarily how effective I was in this, but I was always about is like, if we want to go here, we can't be a little bit good. We have to be very good or great if we're going to go in these directions, right? I have to feel very confident that if I'm doing this, it is a piece of content that is worthwhile and that will stick with you if I decide that I'm going to go in that direction. And that's how I feel about this for the NBA. Like, I thought that the ESPYs, and I'm not just saying this because I work here, I thought they did a great job. You know, like, I thought that everything that they did that was around this time and this moment, they did a fantastic job. I'd seen people make points about the ratings of the ESPYs, but I mean, dude, at the time that it went on and everything that was happening in the world, like, I work here and I personally didn't know the ESPYs were on because my life just had so much other stuff that was going on, you know, but the program itself and the way they did it was fantastic. I mean, people did really good work in making that happen. And the NBA has the resources and access to people where they can do very good work in the course of doing this. But it does have to be very good. Like, that is necessary if you decide that this is the path that you want to take. It has to be very good. And I guess to a degree, you got to get it done quick, because who knows how long this thing's going to be happening. And by this thing, I mean being able to play basketball. Good luck, guys. The whole thing seems doomed. But I don't blame you for trying. It does. We all acknowledge it. It all seems doomed. It seems doomed. But I would really like to watch some NBA basketball. I really would. I really would. By the way, last thing before we go to the next topic. Have you seen all the dudes that have lost all this weight?
Well, I saw Jokic lost a lot of weight. I haven't seen
Jokic. Yeah, Jokic looked like Porzingis. I thought Jokic was Porzingis in that picture until Dan told me it wasn't. Marc Gasol, for the first time ever, a dude Marc Gasol's age can say, I'm in the best shape of my life, and I don't think he's just making it up. He is obviously clearly in the best shape of his life. And Melo, my God, dead serious. I bet you Melo is lighter right now than he has been since the 10th grade.
Guy's looking like offensive lineman post-career.
Yo, exactly. Dude, look up Melo. You can check the HQ on ESPN Twitter feed because they got a video on it. You are not going to believe what you see when you see Melo. Yo, I can see Gabe's face right now, and I have never seen his face contort in the way it did when he got a look at Melo.
Yo.
Yes! It looks like a different person. Props to Melo. I'm learning here who is, in fact, social distancing. Because let me tell you something. If you one of these cats, like, I guess the only people Melo been around is, like, other people playing basketball. But if you as dedicated to your fitness as some of these dudes have been to get back ready, you can't be out here rolling the dice on this unless you got, like, you got to hook up on the test. Yeah, no. Some cats, James Harden, you can barely recognize him. However, when are we going to start seeing the pictures of the other guys? The guys who went in the opposite direction of this. The I can't touch a basketball, I can't get to a gym cat. Like, who's going to be the Sean Kemp of quarantine?
Who's been tweeting about Postmates? Who's been tweeting about Uber Eats?
Right. Yeah, who's not been putting their videos on the Instagram with their trainer?
Yeah, the type of people who, when you're scrolling through and it says, you know, on Uber Eats or whatever, you know, your food delivery app is, and it says your favorites, McDonald's or yes. Burger King, yes. Most frequently ordered, yes. Supersize.
Yeah, let me tell you this, man. If you play for the Nuggets and you show up out of shape, they got to release you on the spot, man. Jokic came back looking like Porzingis, and you couldn't even just go out here and work out on the Nike app a couple times a week? You couldn't do nothing? Somebody's going to show up in Orlando looking bad, and we are going to clown you. All right, Gabe, I tried to make a sandwich here, right? I tried to give them, like, at the top, something kind of serious, you know what I mean? And then in the middle, I feel like I gave you a lot, like the fun. It was like a BLT. You know what I'm saying? Like a BLT with romaine lettuce, because the lettuce was nutritious as opposed to iceberg, which is really just a bunch of water, right? Like, but that's what I gave you. I gave you some protein, gave you a little flavoring. You know what I mean? I did all that in the middle. And now I'm here to tell you that it ain't about to be no football season. And I'm going to explain to you right now why it's not going to be a football season. It's probably why it shouldn't be any of these other seasons, but it's really tied to right now for me why we're not going to have a football season. And I want to run a story by you that I saw. Pro Football Talk did a post on it. I'd seen it in some other places. And basically, there's a company called Quest Diagnostics, laboratory company. And they issued a statement about the soaring demand for COVID tests. And the statement reads as follows. Despite our rapid scaling up of capacity, soaring demand for COVID-19 molecular diagnostic tests across the United States is slowing the time in which we can provide test results. We attribute this demand primarily to the rapid continuing spread of COVID-19 infections across the nation, but particularly in the South, Southwest, and West regions of the country. Specific drivers of demand include preoperative patients undergoing procedures in hospitals and surgery centers, high-risk populations such as those receiving care in federally qualified healthcare centers, nursing homes, and correctional facilities, and individuals seeking testing from community drive/walkthrough events with government agencies and corporations. We now have capacity to perform up to 125,000 molecular diagnostic tests a day, roughly double our capacity 8 weeks ago. By the end of July, we expect to have the capacity to perform 150,000 molecular diagnostic tests a day. Despite that dramatic increase, demand for testing is increasing even faster. As a result, our average turnaround time for reported test results is slightly more than one day for our priority patients. However, our average turnaround time for all other populations is 7 or more days. At Quest Diagnostics, we are doing everything we can to bring more COVID-19 diagnostic testing to patients at this critical time. However, we are limited in how quickly we can add capacity. For instance, global supply constraints continue to be an issue. While our suppliers of test platforms and reagents continue to be responsive to our need to add capacity, they are limited amid surging demand in the United States and globally. Okay. So this is one company. Yes, I understand. But the reason I wanted you to hear all of that is you need to remember when we went on lockdown, like in March and April, the biggest reason why we did it was to stop from overloading the hospital system in America. And that was the big thing in New York when it was really bad, is that what happens when you run out of beds? You know, and not just to the people who have COVID-19, but for the people who just have life. And everything else that comes up, what happens when we run out of hospital space? And I'm reading these stories all across the country, and like Arizona, Texas in particular, they're running out of beds. They're running out of hospital space. And it's going to be a very real question about the social responsibility of trying to play football on whatever level we're discussing, given what is happening to the larger hospital system, right? Given that there is access now to testing, as we say, but the turnaround time is slowing down because there's so many people who need to be tested. The NFL and college football and everybody else, you're going to really have to ask yourselves whether this is so important that we are going to create an unnecessary strain and overload, right? Because that was the thing the NBA said at the very beginning. I'm kind of surprised they're still rolling given that. They were like, look, we're not going to take tests away from people if the country doesn't have enough tests. I don't know how, in good conscience, these colleges and these NFL teams are going to be able to say that they can do this, given that everything about their game is social distancing unfriendly. Everything about what they're doing is COVID-19 friendly, and that's a problem because we don't need to be friendly with COVID, right? I just can't see how we're going to be able to square ourselves and look in the eye and see what's going to be happening in all these places. Houston Chronicle put out an obituary section for all the people who had died with it at the very least, because that's how, you know, the testing goes. It was 43 pages. And people are like, well, that's for the whole time, not just the weekend. Yeah, that's fine. It's 43 pages. And it's getting worse. Like, they're trying now to dial it back and bring everybody back in. Good luck with that. The problem is getting worse. Can the NFL and these colleges really justify to themselves contributing to making it even worse? Somebody's going to die. And some of the guys who don't die are going to suffer some really serious consequences. They're going to need treatment. They're going to need to go places. Like, let me tell you something else that's going to happen in colleges. I don't know if you've seen this story. The Washington Post has it about how terrible the student health centers are. They talked about one school, Harden Simmons. It's a school in Austin. Harden Simmons has something like 2,000 students. And the point they made was that the healthcare center for the athletes is so vastly superior to the healthcare center for the general population, like for the rest of the students. That this is one of those things that, because they need to make sure the product is healthy, you know what I'm saying? That they do all these things. So let me make sure I want to read this right, because John Solomon at the Aspen Institute had this. So listen to this, because he summed these up in some tweets. He says, the Washington Post assessed health services at 1,700 residential campuses and interviews with more than 200 students and everything else, right? Listen to this. In one case, Georgetown University stated on its website that a student health center is accredited, but removed the claim after being asked about it by reporters. Okay. In 2017, colleges on average spent only $185 per student for their healthcare centers. Nearly 70% of colleges surveyed did not have a full-time psychiatrist, and one-third did not have a full-time physician. Hardin-Simmons University, a private school in Texas, 2,000 students, has 3 medical clinics for athletes, but no nurse to treat other students. The school contracted for free COVID-19 testing for athletes, but other students must go off campus for testing and medical care. And he says here, 80 of the 280 colleges contacted by the Washington Post refused to answer questions about budgets and staffing at their campus clinics. All I'm saying is, you think if they get these kids on campus, which of course is a big if, but you think if they get these kids on campus and they look around and realize that the medical care that they get is not cracking, but the athletes get the bomb stuff, how long is it going to be before some students start marching down to the athletic center to go see the doctor? How long is that going to be? Like, yo, man, this is all bad. Like, where we are, the weight of all of this is back to a point. It felt like it was collapsing in March. It's way worse now. Right, where we stand now, when you stop and think about it, given that we had 4 months to get ready for this, it's way worse where we stand right now. And so if the NFL, with all those players and all those people that they're around there, the stress and strain that you're going to have to put on the larger system in order for this to go, it is very difficult for me to believe that this is going to fly, right? And I'll tell you, the moment I realize it ain't going to be no football, it don't look like it's going to be no high school football in Texas. And that's how you know it's real. Like, that's how you know. I saw something, Fort Bend Independent School District. Fort Bend is a county adjacent to Harris County. Houston is in Harris County. Fort Bend County is going all online. They've announced for the at least the next semester. I think it's the next school year, but they're going online. You're not going to be able to justify having a football team under those circumstances, right? That's a lot of high schools in a major area that they're not going to be able to play. This is going to shake out everywhere else. Because what you can't be is Fort Bend shuts down and then HISD, Houston School District, but we going to play. And then something goes bad. Nobody can have that. That's the trickle down. That's the thing about the Ivy League and all these people. Like, we're going to go conference only. Everybody's going to go conference only. And then somebody's going to cancel the whole damn thing like the Ivy League did. And then everybody's going to trickle out. Because the second one school says this is too unsafe, if you say, no, it's cool, and then something bad happens, you got no excuse. And the colleges in particular have no excuse. Because here's one thing no college can say. We couldn't find no scientists to talk to. You know what I mean? Like everybody's got access to it. This shouldn't have taken long for the Ivy League at all. Just call down there. Hey, man, where the epidemiologists at? They got dozens of them. You know what I'm saying? They just call down there. They get it done. So to me, just looking at how this is all shaping up and what's going on in the world right now, the NFL can cross their fingers and hope. The NFL, the NFLPA, they're doing a lot of talking, trying to get this right. I don't know what it's going to take to make it feel safe. I think you're going to see a lot of players who ultimately decide they're not going to go. And you also have to remember you're dealing with a lot of players who are technically obese. And obesity is a big thing here. You're also dealing with a lot of guys. You don't need them lungs next season, too. You're going to need all those things. I can see how they could try to make baseball work. I can see how they can try to make basketball work. I don't know if either of them is going to continue, but for so long. But let me ask you this. Anywhere, okay? Anywhere you go, you see a bunch of 100 people. Either you one of those 100 people, or you looking at those 100 people like they're a bunch of f***ing idiots. I feel like there's no split. It can only be one of the two, right? Football. We're talking about hundreds of people. Each sideline. You can't. It's not built for all the things that we're talking about, no matter the mask or anything else. It's not built for this. And if it's not built for this, and it's going to strain what is an absolute calamity for the whole nation, they're not going to be able to do it. And if they can do it in spite of everything that's going on, if it still looks like it does right now and they can still do it, oh my God, we're even more doomed than I thought.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from Health.
Hi. This is Scott Simon of NPR. You know, ants do it, lobsters do it, even equatorial mandrills do it. So why don't we Americans do it? Why do so many of us not wear masks or keep a wise social distance from each other? I saw a piece in Scientific American that got me wondering. Spiny lobsters, for example, and really, aren't they all kind of spiny, apparently sniff out infection in the urine of another lobster and they don't get too close to them. A study at the University of Bristol found that when ant colonies are exposed to a virus, ants keep their distance. Forager ants, you know, the ones who are out and about to scrounge up plant saps and insect eggs, stay outside the colony so they don't risk infecting the queen or her nurses. Reproduction can safely proceed. Mandrills, I found the most intriguing. They just don't send text messages to each other. Hey, you up a tree? They're highly social beings, live in groups, and groom each other. That fosters cleanliness, friendliness, and what the scientists call social bonding. A 2017 study of mandrills in Gabon found that they altered their grooming habits when they sensed, which is to say, yuck, smelled, that one of their group was infected. Now, why do so many humans decline to keep a safe distance from others under the threat of infection when lobsters, ants, and mandrills are so vigilant? Why do some people refuse to wear a mask or keep 6 feet away from people? Well, lobsters, ants, and mandrills don't watch cable news. They don't scour the internet and social media sites for gobbets of misinformation to fool themselves into thinking this virus, which has sickened and killed so many people, is somehow unreal or hyperbolized. Animals have a sniff test. By the way, a lot of lobsters listen to and support their local public radio stations, and all those tote bags just clutter the ocean floor.
Well played. Wow. So even the animals know how to act right and we don't. I think part of it is misinformation. I also think that part of it is just people being jerks. Like, I'll just tell you, in my neighborhood, I see a whole lot of people now these days walking around who ain't got masks on. And let me tell you something. I don't think they watch Fox News. This is the one that got me. You remember when this all shook out and we were talking about, like, Zoom funerals? When's the last time you heard about somebody attending a Zoom funeral? I haven't heard about, and I'm not saying they're not happening, but I have heard about people going to funerals. I just called my homeboy the other day. His dad died. I found out and I sent him a text because I called him and I couldn't get through. And so I sent him a text and he was like, yo, I'm on the road going to wherever it is now. And it's in a place where they need to worry. Leaving a place where they need to worry. And I'm like, what? Like, it's those kinds of things. I was walking out. I was with my brother and my sister-in-law and we taking pictures. They do photography and, you know, we had an idea for a shoot. So, I was modeling. Work. So, you know, I was doing pictures. And it's interesting because while we're walking, we got the mask on. I took the mask off to take the pictures, but that's the only time. And they are wearing the mask the whole time while they're taking the pictures. I'm looking up on against the wall, and apparently somebody has died because it was t-shirts, you know? And it's like between four different stoops, it's like 20 people. And they just posted up. And it was obvious that this was a funeral-like, you know, sort of situation. They off it. You know, like the decision on those things. And look, I understand, right? I understand why people would want to come together in those times. I'm not being terribly judgmental, but I am saying I don't think those people are operating because of misinformation. I think they've just made some decisions that these are things. Like, I see people I know who damn well know better, and they putting it on Instagram's making me hate so many people. Just put it on Instagram, going to go kick it with family, and it's like 10 people in the house, and they know. Why can't you wear the mask in the house? Like, what's so hard about that? That's the one that gets me, is if it's going to be 10, 20 of y'all, wherever it is, y'all can still wear masks. It's not like going to this funeral in a mask or whatever is not going to interfere with anything. Going to these people's house for a barbecue with a mask, you can still do those things. Why aren't you doing those things?
All right, this next story comes from Tech.
Hi, this is Kat Zakreski, and I write the Technology 202 newsletter for The Washington Post. Last week, civil rights leaders met with top Facebook executives, including Mark Zuckerberg, and it didn't go well. The organizers joined the Facebook executives over Zoom to discuss a recent Facebook ad boycott, where hundreds of companies, including Unilever, Starbucks, and others, decided to pull advertising from the platform in protest of the company's handling of hate speech and disinformation. The civil rights leaders left telling reporters they were unimpressed with Facebook's response to their demands. Rashad Robinson, the president of Color of Change, one of the civil rights groups organizing this boycott, told me and other reporters afterwards that Facebook executives showed up expecting an A for attendance, but didn't have clear responses to the very straightforward demands that civil rights leaders put forward. The civil rights leaders want to see Facebook take a tougher line on disinformation, especially when it comes from politicians such as President Donald Trump. They also want to see the company hire people with civil rights expertise. Facebook has said that it's in the process of hiring, but it's unclear how much power that person will have within the company. All of this is putting more pressure on Facebook just months before the 2020 election, when its handling of disinformation and hate speech is very much in the spotlight, following the issues in 2016.
I got something for Mark Zuckerberg to consider. If I were Mark Zuckerberg, I would start trying to put my name on stuff. And not just anything, but like stuff people like. And I say that because I feel as though history is ultimately going to deem him perhaps the greatest villain of his time. It's entirely possible. Like, you know, Trump and everything that goes around him, depending on your views on the world, whatever. Okay, cool. You know, like there's going to be that. But in the end, it's possible that Trump's only going to be there for 4 years. Right. And I'm not saying that somebody is not capable of doing damage in the course of 4 years, but his period of time that we're talking about is going to be a 4 year period. Basically, I say this because Mark Zuckerberg is like the leading industrialist of the day. You know, like he and Bezos, you know, a couple of those other guys. But like you could argue that Mark Zuckerberg has had more influence on what the world is currently in the last 15 years. No one has been more influential as to what the world is than Mark Zuckerberg. You know, he created a product that changed the world. And it was a product that came with great cause for optimism in the very beginning when he first started. The ability to open up the world and make it smaller. But another thing, and this is important, I read a book about this. It was called The Facebook Effect. I can't remember who wrote it, but it was definitely a book about Facebook in, you know, from the early days that was very much so like Zuckerberg clearly had a hand in it. I don't mean that he like got to double check the copy or whatever, but it was very friendly to him. It does not read like the social network does. I'll put it like that. But the point that they kept trying to make at that time was that Facebook would create transparency, and transparency was better for the world. That transparency would encourage good behavior, right? Because people had to put their names on it and all of that stuff, right? But like transparency would force people into behaving better and therefore would make the world a better place. And nothing about any of these tools anymore feel like transparency. You see what I mean? Like the concern is always about who's lying to you, where it's coming, like all, you know, you understand what I'm saying? Like all those things are there. The most wildly optimistic things that people thought Facebook could become, and this is from people who were involved with Facebook, from what they thought that it could become, it is now represented by the opposite. And when all is done, it is really, really possible that the world that we live in and the world that people ultimately try to take down, they're going to look back with their fingers pointed at Mark Zuckerberg and they're going to say, you did this. You know, and at first, because he was young, it was very easy to look at him through a lens that was not tied to our standard understandings of capitalism. You know, like, oh, no, that's not, you know, he's just, you know, wow, look at this guy. He just stumbled into this. What a great thing. And now he's rich and everything else and all that stuff. That I think it was the way that it was easy to look at him. But now, man, that dude's like, you know, mid-30s. He's been the CEO of this company for how long? Like, no, man, he's just one of them now. You know, and maybe he's been one of them forever. I don't know. But the emphasis on profit is understandable. But you can't do that after you started selling this as a product that would positively change the world. He's going to have to answer for this in the ultimate reckoning, like the historical reckoning. He's really, really, really going to have to answer for a whole lot of this stuff. Because I really do believe out of all these people that we're talking about, he is going to go down as the villain.
Our last story comes from entertainment. So it's such a short story, I figured I would just give people a top line version myself. So an unopened copy of a vintage Super Mario Bros. Game has been sold in auction for $114,000. It's a game released in 1985 for Nintendo's NES console. Your thoughts?
First of all, I love that you call it a Super Mario Bros. That is a generational disconnect right there, because this is the bro generation. Like, when it crossed racial lines too, right? Like, bro used to be like, well, white boy said, not anymore. Everybody says bro. I'm from Houston. We say bruh. Right, but y'all, everybody does bro. And you can see, yeah, so Super Mario Brothers. We always just send it all the way out. But in the bro generation, it's Super Mario Bros. Super Mario Brothers, like, is there any way to explain to the kids how it was that the first few Super Mario Brothers games were so much fun? Like, I wonder how that translates over generationally, because they must scoff at us. Like, the way that we looked at Pong. And we're like, oh, that's what y'all was doing? Like, that kept y'all entertained for hours? But anyway, I'll just tell you another story. So back before we weren't as nice to people as we are now, when I was in college, we had all kinds of jokes about people. Anyway, somehow there was a person that I went to college with, and one of my homeboys looked at that person and determined that that person looked like one of the characters on Super Mario Brothers that was called a Goomba. One of the problems with Super Mario Brothers, by the way, is they have a lot of names when you go back and look at them that I don't even know if I can say out loud, right? But of course, I'm at a black college with all these black people who have no like real Italian familiarity. So nobody even understands what has happened here. with that, right? So anyway, he decided that this person looked like that. And so whenever that person was around, we would run and then jump with our hand over our heads like we was breaking the brick. And then we would start going, dunna, 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 dunna. And that person was so confused. Like, what is that? What is that song? Dunna, dunna, dunna. Why they be doing that? And it was just the funniest thing in the world. We used to be cruel, but it was a lot of fun. Yeah, we do it just like that. That one hand up. We was off the chain, boy.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. Are you familiar with Red Table Talk?
I am.
How familiar are you with it? And or when did you learn of its existence?
I learned of its existence, I guess, like a year or two ago, whatever. Like, I knew of it. It's a Jada Pinkett calls people in and they, you know, talk about stuff. But I had never, like, actually watched one until recently.
I was going to say, so did you watch the episode of Red Table Talk from this past week? I believe it was posted on...
I think it was Friday. I did.
Yeah, and so Jada Pinkett had on husband Will Smith, right?
Yes.
And so can you describe for the listeners what took place?
All right, long and short, August Alsina basically came out and told the world that in his early... in mid-20s, that he was engaged in a relationship of sorts with Jada Pinkett. He had fallen deeply in love with her, and then she didn't, because he's cool with their son, with Jaden, you know? And so there have been long been questions about how Will Smith and Jada Pinkett's, like, the institutional dynamics of their relationship and everything, and now you find out about August Alsina, and then Jada Pinkett has to get on the tweets and say, I am calling myself to the red table, because that's what she do. She go find these people that's going through whatever and then make them come to the red table. And so now she had to come to the red table, but I guess she couldn't come to the red table alone. And so she brought her husband with her, which, I mean, that's love, homeboy. Like, I feel like you should not have to be here for this. This is Will Smith got to feel like what it's like to be the woman at the press conference when your man get caught up for some sort of sexual malfeasance and you got to sit up there and hold hands. So anyway, Jada Pinkett came to the red table talk to explain that she did, in fact, have this relationship with this boy that was half her age at the time. And she said that she got caught in an entanglement. To which Will Smith was like, a what? That was her line. Entanglement is how she referred to this relationship that she had with this dude. And poor him, right? She couldn't just call it a relationship. Like that's, I can't imagine how heartbroken I would be if I was in love, as clearly as in love this boy was with her, and she just called it an entanglement. Man, that's rough. But anyway, so we was just thinking your stories about the time that somebody tried to finesse you with one of them euphemisms.
And we got a bunch of good ones. Our first comes from Kim. She didn't say where she was from, but it was a good one.
So this happened, I forgot how old I was. I went out. And I'm remember hearing stories about women going out with dudes, and they try to talk to them, and you tell them, no, okay, no, I got a man. I was just like, my godmother gave me this ring. So I was like, wait a minute, let me go out. You know, she just went ring to say I'm married. So this dude come talk to me. He was like, he wanted to holler at me, and I was just like, hey, I'm married. I got this ring. I put my ring. He showed me his ring. He was like, yeah, I'm married too. So I'm just trying to conjugulate with you, you know, we can just do whatever we want to. You can go back to a man, I can go back to my woman. And I'm like, conjugulate? And I just bust out laughing in front of this host, because, like, one, I wasn't married. I just want you to leave me alone. And he was married until I talked to me. So it was just, I mean, the crazy thing is, like, I still use that word for other stuff too, but he wanted to conjugulate with me, and yeah, that was that.
What? Wow. You don't even do that to a verb. I don't know what he was trying to put together there to make that happen. At first, I thought he was trying to say triangulate. You know what I mean? Like, the angles? No. Damn. Not exactly what I had in mind with this topic, but a worthwhile call.
All right. These other ones, They didn't leave their name or where they were from, but they were worthy. Here comes our next one.
I was in a relationship with this girl, right? And, like, we weren't dating for a long time, but we were dating for a little bit. And she come up to me one day. She's like, yo, I kissed this dude. And I was like, what do you mean you kissed this dude? She's like, yeah, I just kissed this dude. Nothing big, nothing serious, and it meant nothing, right? So I'm like, all right, cool. We can move past this. I ain't really know dude who she kissed, but she told me who it was. I went and talked to him. He's like, man, I didn't know that was a girl. I'm sorry. Like, it ain't that big of a deal. I was like, man, it's fine. Like, it was meaningless, right? And he's like, yeah. You know, he wasn't tripping. I wasn't tripping. And I was like, all right, ain't no big deal. I ain't going to fight you or nothing over this. Like, it ain't your fault. You ain't know. Dude's like, man, why are you taking this so well? I was like, man, just a kiss. It don't mean nothing. He said, a kiss? Nah, nah, she's man. And I was like, what? He said, she's man. I went back over to her, and I was like, you told me it was just a kiss. And she told me, I never said where. I don't know what to do, though.
Did he say, I don't know what to do? Like, is this a current situation?
I don't know what to do, though.
Woo! Again, not exactly what I had envisioned. I thought there would be a fancier word. Instead, she just hit you with some game.
Sounds like Bo the Love Doctor here. Bo's going to have to give some advice.
Wow. I mean, I got news for you. If you need advice, you're not going to take the advice I give you. I feel like you could advise yourself on this one.
What do you think about the line, it meant nothing?
I mean, okay. That. Wow, I just didn't see that taking that turn.
This one takes another turn. Here's our last one for the day.
All right, so a couple years ago, back when I was in college, I used to work at a retail store. And this guy that I worked with told me he got a new job and he's going to be making 6 figures a year. And he can get me in at this financial firm. So I go with him to meet his boss. His boss's name was Tony. And he told me what we would be doing would be called network marketing. That's the term, network marketing. Just a fancy way of saying pyramid scheme. It took me a couple weeks, but I figured it out. And when I told them, hey, I think this is a pyramid scheme, Tony said, no, your retail job is a pyramid scheme because in order for you to move up, your boss has to get fired.
No, your job is a pyramid scheme. This is not a pyramid scheme. My favorite was the time my homeboy, somebody tried to get him on a pyramid scheme, and he was so mad because the dude just wouldn't admit it was a pyramid scheme, right? Like, come to me as your equal, not as your sucker.
Let's call it what it is.
Well, that's the thing about a pyramid scheme. You can approach the people to get into a pyramid scheme because either A, you think they're the type who would profit from a pyramid scheme, or B, you think they're the type of person who would fall for a pyramid scheme. That's all you got. Wow. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Scott Simon of NPR. Check out his story about what we can learn from lobsters and ants about social distancing. Thanks to Kat Zakreski of The Washington Post. Check out her story on Facebook meeting with civil rights groups after the ad boycott. And thanks to all you people willing to tell stories that I would take with me to the grave. Subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.